Okay. Good morning. So nice to meet all of you. I don't love giving Zoom shiurim, but I do love George. So I figured if he asked me to give a shiur, I could volunteer. I just very impersonal. I would love to be sitting around a table with all of you. I think that would be complicated unless you flew me to LA. But my understanding is that everyone in the shiur here lives in LA except for George and I. Is that accurate? That's accurate. Okay. Okay, beautiful. Well, also, and I apologize. I'm sure there were better options, but I'm happy to be giving this year this morning. I wanted to learn together what is to me an extremely interesting sugya that starts from a one letter in this week's parsha. One letter in this week's parsha. When Moshe Rabbeinu goes to Paro and tells him, okay, it's time, this is it, Makas Bechoros, we're getting out of here, this is time to end this. So Moshe says, Vayomer Moshe, Ko Amar Hashem, Perek Yud Aleph, Ko Amar Hashem, Kachatzos HaLayla Niyotzi B'toch Mitzrayim. Around midnight, I'm going to get into Mitzrayim, Umeis Kol Bechor, and then all the firstborns are going to die, and etc. We're all going to go free after that. That's the tenth and the last of the Bechor. Makos says, Moshe Rabbeinu to Paro, Kichatzos HaLayla. It's going to be, again, around Chatzos HaLayla. And the Gemara in Brachos and Daf Gimel and Beis and Rashi here references it. Are bothered. What's Kichatzos HaLayla, right? Why does it say around Chatzos? Hashem told him it's going to be Chatzos HaLayla. Kadosh Baruch Hu can literally write, tell us exactly the millisecond things are going to happen. Why in the world would Moshe say Kichatzos HaLayla around Chatzos HaLayla? So the Gemara on Daf Dalet Amud Aleph Maseches Brachos, which we're going to get back to in the end of this year. But the Gemara says the following language. I'm just going to read it to you. The Gemara says, "The Amar, sorry, the Gemara says, Lama leilamemer kechatzos. Why is it kechatzos? Kasavar shema yitu paro. Maybe the astrologers of Paro are going to make a mistake. Vayomru Moshe badayhu, and they're going to say Moshe's a liar. So therefore." The Amar, that's why he said kichatzos, meaning it wasn't that he doubted HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could tell us exactly when it's going to happen, but he was nervous that they were going to make a mistake. And since they were going to make a mistake, right, therefore he said kichatzos. So then the Gemara says the following principle. The Amar Mar, limed lishonecha lomar eini yodea. Teach yourself to say eini yodea, I don't know. Shema tispada male people will make a mistake and they will hold on to it. Meaning there are times when there's a value in saying eini yodea, saying I don't know. So a little bit b'derech drush, we're going to use that lime lashon chalom eini yodea to transition into a fascinating sugya, and it's really about lying. Our entire discussion today is going to be about lying, but it's going to be a unique angle about lying. I don't think it's the typical angle. It's going to be lying about halacha. Am I allowed to lie about the halacha? Now, you may ask, why would I want to lie about the halacha, right? If someone asked me halacha, why would I want to lie to them about the halacha? So we're going to go through a few circumstances where a person may want to lie about the halacha. And the first one, mainly because it literally plays off the words eini yodea, is a fascinating shaila that was asked of Yaakov Reischer. Yaakov Reischer is, or was, the Shvus Yaakov. He has a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, and he also has Tshuvos. And in his Chelek Aleph, Simen Kuf Lamed Ches of his Tshuvos, he got the following question. There is a Gemara in Sanhedrin that says that normally when it comes to monetary law, we have three judges, and if the two of the three side on one side, we pass in the halacha, as opposed to in Dine Nefashos, when it comes to things of capital crime, we do not do that. When it comes to monetary law, the halacha is we follow the majority. 2/1. However, the Gemara Sanhedrin on Daf Hei Amud Beis and Daf Chav Tes Amud Aleph has the following fascinating halacha. It's not our sugya for today, why the Gemara has this halacha. That's its own sugya, but the Gemara is upon halacha. If two judges say, let's say, again, just to use names here, let's say, right, George and Jacob are in a Dine Mamonos dispute, and George owes Jacob $1,000, right? And two judges say that George is chayiv the $1,000. Now, the truth is, what the third judge does it says shouldn't really matter because we have two saying he's chayev. So whether the last guy says chayev, great. If he says pater, who cares? Because we have two judges saying that's chayev. However, the Gemara has the following halacha. If two judges say George is chayev, and the third says eini yodea, I'm not sure. I'm genuinely not sure if he is chayev or not. The evidence is unclear to me. I can't paskin that he's pater. I can't paskin that he's chayev. I am not sure. The halacha is it's not going to be George is chayev, even though that would seem to be logical. We have two judges saying he's chayev, and the third judge shouldn't matter. The halacha is mosifu alav hadayanim. We add two more judges to that judge. We do not paskin based on the two that have said chayev already. So again, here's the case. You have three judges. Two of them say chayev. One says eini yodea. You don't paskin. That's a straight gemara. It's a straight halacha. Rabbi Yaakov Reischer got the following fascinating shaila. The shaila was, a guy is sitting on a court case, and he realizes that the two judges that he's sitting with are not yashar people. They're not good people. And he knows by the way that they're talking, no matter what evidence comes up, they're going to say George is chayiv. He sees it. He says, I know that if I whatever is going to happen, they're going to say George is chayiv. They're against George. They're not on his side. They're going to pass Nevi no matter what. And this is the shaila that Rabbi Yaakov Reischer got. Was I allowed? We'll tell you. We'll say what he did and what if it was good. He says, was I allowed to say eini yodea, even though I actually knew the halacha was that he was pater. I knew George was pater, but I knew that these judges were out to get him. If I would have said pater, my judgment would have got thrown out. But if I would have said eini yodea, so now all of a sudden, right, George is going to have a shot at winning the case because they're going to add two more judges. Those two judges are going to realize that these two guys are crooked, and now we'll have a winning verdict. So the shaila was, just making sure everyone understands the question. The shaila was, can I lie? That's the question. Can I lie and say eini yodea? I'm not sure when I really am sure, in order to get the judgment that I want, which is that we'll get a hung jury, what we call a hung jury. We'll get two more judges added to the case, and then George is going to become out innocent. I don't know if you normally do interactive here, George, but I'm gonna open it to the floor. Do you guys have any thoughts? What do you think? Is he allowed to say any yodea?
I would say no.
You'd say no.
The end doesn't justify the means, and you have to say the truth. No,
So you
said
say
it, said it's
pater,
true.
even though it's gonna mess up the kid, it's gonna make the
Yeah.
guy who's really okay. Yeah, George, what were you gonna say?
You know,
Oh,
I agree
Jonathan, yeah.
with that. It's I don't see how you could lie. Yeah.
It's not lying. It's what do you call it? Omission or it's he's not answering. In other words, he's not saying he's saying, I don't know if I can paskin. And it's not a lie. It's he doesn't know if he can paskin.
You're saying his eini yodea is not a lie?
Look
He
at
knows. He knows.
I tell you like this, when it comes to
Yeah.
Hilchos Nida, okay?
Yeah.
Comes to Hilchos Nida, you take a Mara clock to a Rebbe. The Rebbe says, I can't give you an answer. Okay. To him it might be usser, but he says you gotta go ask somebody else because I can't give you an answer. That's something that it's been quite a few years that we've had to deal with this, but that is similar to him. Instead of saying it's not good, I can't tell you it's mutter, so you got to go show it to somebody else who might be more knowledgeable.
Why are you assuming that he knows it's not mutter, that he really isn't sure?
Yeah, I would assume that. I think I do understand your case. I understand that case of the Mara, which is an interesting case, is that he's saying, I'm not sure, and if I'm not sure, I'll probably have to tell you it's us, or I'd rather you go to someone bigger than me who maybe will be able to tell you that it's mutter. Meaning he's not, yeah, I would say that he's not, meaning here, his eini yodea is for sure, right? He knows. He's not unsure. He knows.
Okay. Okay,
But,
I was given the benefit of the doubt.
So I'll tell you what the psak was. The Shvus Yaakov Reischer thought you could pass in any yodea. He said you could say any yodea. You're allowed to say in that case, I'm not sure. Why? Because he felt that again, it's the lashon of the tshuva. You could look it up. Chelek Aleph Siman Kuf Lamed Ches. He says mutter l'sha'as b'nei shalom. He said you're allowed to lie for peace. Now I agree with you. I don't know if you go by Jacob or Yaakov. Jacob,
Yaakov.
Yaakov, Yaakov. I agree with you, Yaakov. It's right. It gets a little right. Does the end justify the means? I think that the svara of in any yodea is not the same thing as lying, and he knows that these other two guys are lying. That seems to be the thrust of the tshuva of the Shvuos Yaakov. But Yaakov Reicher thought you are allowed to lie in this case. You're allowed to misrepresent in order, right, in order to get the psak that you want. I'll give you another fascinating question and psak. We're gonna do three tshuvas. All three that are straight tshuvas. The next tshuva was the Binyan Sion, Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger. Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger, living in the 1800s in Europe, got a shaila from someone who was not particularly religious, but as we all know, when it comes to Dinei Avelos, even the less religious become very religious, again, in a beautiful way. I'm not saying that cynically. In a beautiful way, right? People get more serious about halacha when it comes to the area of Kibud Avayim and that area of Avelos. So he got a shaila about a couple that was getting married that was not so religious. And the shaila, I should give you the Marmakom. I like to give the Marmakomos. It is Siman Kuf Lamed Tes in the Binyan Sion, if you want to look it up. Siman Kuf Lamed Tes. He got the following shaila. The shaila was, am I allowed to dance at the wedding? If I'm in the year of Avelos, are we allowed to have dancing at the wedding if we're in this, we're still betoch shana of my year of Avelos? That was the shaila. Parents had passed away, and the shaila was, am I allowed to dance at the wedding based on Dine Avelos? So from a pure Hilchos Avelos standpoint, the halacha is pretty pashut. It's actually black on white. You are certainly allowed to dance at the chasana. There is no shaila. Zero. There is zero shaila. You're allowed to dance at the chasana. But Rav Yaakov Etling had the following cheshbon. What was going to be the dancing at this particular chasana? What was the style of dancing that was going to be? Mixed dancing. It was going to be men and women dancing together. So the struggle was, if I pass into this guy, you're allowed to have dancing, which is the Hilchos Aveilus psak. So he's going to have mixed dancing at his wedding. If I pass in for him, you can't have dancing at the wedding. Then guess what? He's not going to have mixed dancing at his wedding. And the question was, is should he pass in? Right? Should he paskin that they're allowed to have dancing, because that's the technical Hilchos Avelos answer, or should he paskin that they can't have dancing, which is going to mislead them, because the reason they can't have dancing is not because of Hilchos Avelos, but because he did not want to have mixed dancing. I'll open the floor again. What do you think he paskin? You don't have to tell me what you think even. What do you think he paskin? What do you think he said? What do you think of Yaakov Ettlinger said?
I think he said
No
that
dancing.
He said no dancing. So that is exactly what he said. If you read the tshuva inside, actually, if you read the tshuva inside, I don't know the conversation that he had with the family, or if it was a conversation or a tshuva. In this case, I would say it wasn't really lying. It's a similar case to lying. It happens to be Ravad Yosef has a tshuva where he discusses this. Ravad Yosef discusses this tshuva of Yaakov Ettlinger, and he thinks that you're allowed to, again, mutter l'shas b'nei hashalom, you're allowed to like kind of mislead here, because it's going to lead to an ultimate good. But if you read the tshuva of Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger, it's pretty clear that he was saying you can't have dancing at the wedding, and he says halavai that we got rid of all dancing at all weddings. So meaning, I don't know if he said that to this chasan and kala, but it's clear that Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger thought that in this case he was allowed to, again, I would say mislead. I don't know if it's lying. He said, are we allowed to have dancing at our wedding? He said, no, you can't have dancing at your wedding. His reason was because you can't have mixed dancing. The guy asking the shaila was asking because he did not want to have he didn't want to have Avelos, initial Avelos, but either way, Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger passed that you cannot have dancing. The third case that I want to get to, though, is actually one of my favorite like just history meisim with fascinating analysis that happened in 1865. I don't know how to pronounce the city, so I apologize, but it's called like Michalovce or something like that, or Michalovce, which was a city that's currently in Slovakia. It's currently a city in Slovakia. It used to be a city in Hungary. If you know the
Ben
city,
Warshawski, we have an expert on names, and Ben Warshawski sometimes knows these things.
oh, okay. So Ben, you want to tell me how to pronounce this? I can spell it out for you if you want, but I certainly do not know how to pronounce it.
I don't claim any kind of knowledge of Slovakia, so I don't know.
Okay, I'll post on the chat though here for the sake of I'm just hold on 1 second. I'm just gonna copy and paste it here.
Ben's our Yiddish expert,
Okay, so this is where is the chat? Here we go. Okay, so this is the name of the city. You can pronounce that however you like. That's the name of the city.
Michalovce. I would say Michalovce.
Mikhailovka. Okay, so I'll just go with that. It was a city in former Hungary, current Slovakia. So if you're not again, I'm not an expert, so Ben, maybe you can help me but the basic history of Hungary in the 1800s was that there was a large rise of reform and conservative Judaism, mainly reform Judaism. And later, the rise of conservative Judaism and the different the groups that grew out of it, and I'll say more importantly, more significantly for the Orthodox community, the concept of Haredi Judaism really was born out of Hungary in around the mid 1800s. When I say the concept of Haredi Judaism, I literally even mean the name. Haredi Judaism. It didn't exist until around that time. And the reason was it was a reaction to the reform and the conservative of the time. If these are the people that are bringing the religion in one direction, we're going to make sure that we're the Haredim, the ones that are the stronghold in the other direction. And in 1865, there was a major document that came out. It was one of the most famous and important documents that came out in that time period. In regards to this split of the Jewish community, because up until that point, really in Hungary specifically, again, Germany and each area was a little bit different, but in Hungary specifically, up until that point, there was no formal split of the community. There were parts of the community going this way, parts of the community going that way, parts of the community disagreeing. But until this point in 1865, there wasn't really a formal split of the community. But what happened in this at this time, there were shuls that were opening that were under the, again, the heading of Orthodox. There were shuls that were opening under the heading of Orthodox, and they were making certain changes in the shul. And this document, known again in like more academic circles now, if this is what the document is called. It's called the Ultra Orthodox Manifesto. That's what it's called. If you want, I could share the document, the PDF on this chat as well. You can read it afterwards. It's a very worthwhile read in terms of history and in terms of halacha. But this document took the nine issues that they were changing in shuls, and took them to task for it. So there were nine issues that they were changing. Does anyone know any of the things that they were doing in the shuls? Is like a little bit of Jewish history. Anyone know what they were doing in the shuls that people were upset about? Some are things that we do now openly. Nobody cares. But there were at that time there were big deals.
It was the drusha and the vernacular. I think those
Ah,
are the
that was
big
the most
ones.
famous, the drush and the vernacular.
Where the whether you can do weddings in the shul, where you have the scent, where you have the bima.
Excellent. Yeah, exactly. Those are three of them. The chuppah and the Beis HaKnesses is one of them. Where you have the bima is one of them. The other one, which is very uncommon now, one of the most popular ones at that time, was the choir synagogue. Are you allowed to have a choir in the synagogue? I grew up. I don't know if anyone here is a Yekki. I grew up in. I went to Broyers, so I got to
Wonderful.
see the Broyers choir in Washington Heights. But again, the choir was a big deal. Again, a few little other things about where two were related to the choir. One was related to the mechitza. Are you allowed to do a mechitza where the women can see the men? That was a big shaila at the time. Are you allowed to make a like a tower? Like kind of like a church would look like a tower. There were nine different issues that they took to task. But what they said, and this is the important part, what they said in this document was that it is 100% forbidden to go into these shuls. The language of that document, and again, I can send it to you after this year is over. The language of that document was, it is considered like a base of Avodah Zarah. It is a house of Avodah Zarah. It is 100% usher to go in there. Even if this is the language of the tshuva, even if it's Yom Kippur and there's no other minyan in your town, better to daven b'yechidus than to step foot into those shuls. Now, that was the language of the tshuva. There were 24 of the Gedolei Hador of Hungary at the time that signed on this letter. Now, again, the reason that they felt so strongly about this issue was because, again, if we remember, again, Jewish history at that time, right? this was the issue of the time. Now, it happens to be, even today in 2024, there is a real Shaila and is discussed at length. It is a real Shaila. Are you allowed to daven in a conservative in a conservative shul? In fact, there are communities, people, Rabbanim that I know, that wouldn't even step foot in a conservative shul. So, for example, in Boca, I don't know what they do in L.A. In Boca, one of the main wedding halls is a place called B'nai Torah, which is a conservative, it's a conservative shul here in Boca Raton. They happen to have a nice wedding hall, and I would say I have a simcha there probably twice a month. Literally, it's the most popular wedding hall and bar mitzvah place and dinners and shul dinners. It's a very popular place. There are people who would not even come to the shul dinners or the things like that because it's in a conservative building. Now, they don't do anything in the sanctuary. They don't do anything in the sanctuary. There's a big shaila, you let a daven in a conservative sanctuary. There have been many tshuvas written on this, again, over the years. So even Arayom HaZeh, the shaila is a shaila. But I don't believe anyone would tell you nowadays that it's doma to a base of Avodah Zarah. I don't think. Maybe they would. I don't think they would tell you it's doma to a base of Avodah Zarah. But at that time, they felt very strongly to write a very strong language. What I want to share with you, though, is not just that tshuva. There's one Rav who very famously at that time did not sign on this. And when I say famously at that time did not sign on this, it wasn't like a hidden thing. He actually spoke out against it. The Maharam Shik, who was arguably the Gadol Hador of Hungary at that time, the Maharam Shik refused to sign this letter. And in the back of the Tshuvas of the Chassam Sofer, it's called the Kute Tshuvas Chassam Sofer, Simen Pei Beis, there is a letter that the Maharam Shik wrote about why he refused to sign this document. And his reasoning was that he felt that they were using halachic, meaning they were using exaggerated psakim that weren't really accurate. Specifically, he was very upset they called it a base of Avodah Zarah. He said, how dare we bend the halacha to get people not to come into these shuls? And he writes, just so you understand, he writes, I don't believe you should daven in these shuls. I would never tell you to daven in these shuls. I wouldn't daven in these shuls myself. But he writes very, very clearly, he says that we don't lie in halacha in order to get people to do something that we want them to do. He said, if we want you to do the right halacha, we tell you the psak and you should do the right halacha. But we'll never lie about what the halacha is to get you to do what we want, right? Now, I can't say 100%, but what I could say is that going back to the tshuva of the Binyan Sion, I would suggest, right, that in that case, the Maharam Shik would not tell him you can't have dancing altzavelus, or even mislead and say, I think the Maharam Shik would say, listen, altzelchos havelus, it's mutter. Altz mixed dancing, you definitely should not have mixed dancing at your wedding. I think that's what the Maharam Shik would say. Meaning the Maharam Shik's point is that we can't lie, right, to get people to keep the correct halacha. If they're going to keep the correct halacha, it's because we tell them the truth. And the Maharam Shik writes very clearly, and this is why it's an interesting case. He says, it's us to daven in those shuls. I would not tell him to daven in those shuls. He says, but I refuse to sign this letter, which has in it what I believe is sheker, in order to get people to keep halacha. That was the psak of the Maharam Shik. I think that the reason that I think this is very interesting, and there's a lot more examples, I just gave you three. It hits on to me a very, very interesting question of what is emes and what is sheker. And in a halacha, like, what do we view as, like, you know, emes and sheker, right? In this case, right, you can make the argument that what we're calling emes, what we're calling technical emes, right, is, yes, it's the truth, but it's not the ultimate long-term goal, right, of what we want to keep. Meaning, am I allowed to, and Yaakov, you said something before that I think is really at the crux of this question, am I allowed to have the ends justify the means? Am I allowed to, right, have that end, that ultimate goal, which is for, you know, l'hagdol Torah v'yadira, to make Torah greater, to make Kiddush Hashem Shemayim, am I allowed to do something in the now that maybe is misrepresenting, but ultimately is going to bring more Kiddush Shemayim, or not? And that seems to be, to me, at the crux of this shaila. I gave you three tshuvas. I can give you more examples another time, Mirtz Hashem. I want to leave you with wanting more so that George will invite me back. But there's more there's more tshuvas on this concept in this way. But I think it gets to a really core idea. And as I was told, the minhag is to come back and make a little more drush. So I want to come back to the psukim in the Torah. And I want to focus actually on two on two things that, again, to me, really speak to this question of like really, really, really making sure that when you talk, you're really speaking the emes. So in this week's parasha, again, we have this kichatzos halayla, right? Moshe Rabbeinu says it's kichatzos halayla. It's like it's midnight, even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him chatzos halayla. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says it's going to happen exactly chatzos. So our first question was, why would Moshe Rabbeinu say that, right? If it wasn't really true. There's another example, actually, of something very, very similar. If you look in Parashas Metzora, Perek Yedalet Pasuk Lamed Hey, the Torah talks about the fact that Hashem teaches the halacha. You're going to come to Eretz Canaan. You're going to see, I'm going to give you something called Saras in the house, right? Nega Habayis, right? There's a Nega in the house. And the Pasuk says, Pasuk Lamed Hey, Uba Asher Lo Habayis V'Higid L'Kohen Lemor, Ki Nega Nirali Babayis. Like a nega I saw in the house. And again, the question is, what's kinega nerali babayis, right? You're going to come to the Kohen and you're going to tell him, I saw a nega in my house. I saw a nega. What's kinega nerali babayis? So if you look at Rashi there, again, Yedal Lamed, hey, Rashi says, afilu tamil chacham sheyodeya shehu nega vadai. Even if we're talking about a tamil chacham, who knows? It's a nega for sure. Lo yifsog davar barer lomar nega nerali ela kinega nerali. He shouldn't say a clear psak, it is a nega. He should say, kinega nerali, it's like a nega. It seems like a nega to me. And the question is, what's the pshat in this Rashi? What? Why? Why would a Talmud Chacham have to say, kinega nerali v'bayis? Why can't he just say, I saw a nega? The simple pshat in this Rashi is that it's derech eretz. If you look at the Re'im, I'm actually in front of me, I'll make a plug for my favorite chumash. If you've ever seen this chumash, there's a chumash that is the Yud Aleph Mefarshei Rashi. It's 11 commentaries on Rashi. It's a Mikras Gedolos chumash. It's my absolute favorite chumash. So the Re'im, the Mizrahi, the most famous of the Mefarshei Rashi, probably the earliest of the Mefarshei Rashi. So he says, the pshat is, it's derech eretz, it's midas derech eretz. You shouldn't say, I saw a nega. Say, I think I saw a nega. It seems like I saw a nega. In fact, many poskim, right, will talk this way. I had a Rebbe, Rebbe Eliyahu Soloveitchik. Rebbe Eliyahu Soloveitchik is the oldest son of Rebbe Aaron Soloveitchik from Chicago. So Rebbe Eliyahu Soloveitchik would never, ever give a pesach unless he said, I think. And I used to like, when I first met him, I was confused because I would ask him a shayla. I'd be like, you know, Rebbe, can I eat this? He'd be like, I think you could eat it. And I would say to him, like, not jokingly, I was like, you think I could eat it or I could eat it? Like, I just want to be sure. Can I eat it? And he would always say, like, I think you could eat it. He would never, like, say, you could eat it. Now, some poskim are not like that. I have rabbanim who don't talk that way. They're very much, yes, no, you know, they're very straight. But he always, I think this is his makor. I think he would never want to give a direct 100% psak. He was saying, I think, I'm pretty sure, right? There's a derech eretz, there's a humility. I'm not 100% sure. But if you look at the Maharal on this, in the Gur Arye on this Rashi, so the Maharal says a different vort. And I think to me, it's such a good musser in terms of emes. The Maharal says, what's the pshat? I see a nega in my house and I go to the Kohen and I tell the Kohen, right? You need to come to my house because I have a nega. Says the Maharal, until the Kohen says it's a nega, it's not halachically a nega. A nega is only a nega once the Kohen paskins, it's a nega. So says the Maharal, it's not pshat in midos derech eretz. It's not just like a humility to be like, I'm not sure, maybe it's a nega. No, no, no. I'm sure that it looks like a nega, but until the Kohen comes, sees it, and paskins, it's not a nega. It's not halachically defined as a nega. So says the Maharal, and this is his language, aval tam hadavar, dover shekarim lo yichun. Someone who speaks falsely won't be established, meaning the Talmud Chacham is so careful in his words that he won't say nega nerali babayis because it's not a nega. It's not a nega until the Kohen comes to my house, sees the nega, paskins it, and says, ah, taka, it's a nega. What I think is so powerful about the Maharal, for sure, even the pashup shot of the Ra'im is a great muster about being humble in the way that we speak. But what I think is very powerful about the Maharal is that the Maharal is saying it's not just a Musar in Derech Eretz, it's a Musar in Emes. How sure are you that something is true? And until you are 100% that something is true, don't say it in a definitive way. How do you know? How do you know? It's not, again, it's not just in like how I speak. It's even, I don't even know if it's true. It's not true until the Kohen comes and passes it. Even if I'm a Talmid Chacham and I know this is going to be considered a nega, I can't say it's a nega until then. I want to tell you a better, even a stronger raya though, and that's coming back to this week's parsha. Kichatzos, right? Moshe Rabbeinu says Kichatzos. So Tosfos asks the following question. I'm going to read you the Tosfos, and again, the answer to me is very, very powerful, Moser. Tosfos says, "V'im Tomar Mikol Makom Lema Bichatzos K'mo Shamrulo Min HaShemayim Da Emes Amrulo." Tosfos says, I learned this Gemara. I got the whole thing." But Hashem said, Bichatzos, Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the creator of the world, infinite, can do anything, said, Bichatzos. So Moshe Rabbeinu, you're quoting Hashem. You can be confident to say, Bichatzos, meaning Tosfos Kasha is even after the whole Gemara. I still don't understand. Say, Bichatzos, because that's what Hashem said to you. And listen to Tosfos' answer. V'yesh lomar, Shelo ratza lomar lahem davar. Shelo hayayachal laharos ulahochiach im yishalulo. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to say anything that he himself couldn't show them and prove to them if they asked him back. Now, again, this example to me is even stronger than the Maharal. This example is Moshe Rabbeinu knows 100% because Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the creator of the world, told him what's going to happen, that it's going to happen exactly at Chatzos. But he was sensitive to the fact that if they asked him, how can you prove? He would have to say, I can't, right? I can't. Told me, that's my proof. I spoke to God. I spoke to God. He told me this. We've seen my nine makos already. His word is pretty good. And Moshe was still nervous to say bichatzos because he couldn't himself prove to them what he was saying was true. Now, again, to me, that's a really big muster in terms of how careful we are when we speak and making sure that we say the truth, right? I have a pet peeve. I don't know if anyone else ever has this pet peeve, but you ever when people give debate Torah, sometimes they ask a question, and then they'll say the answer is right. The answer is what do you mean? The answer is the answer. There's only one answer. You're telling me the only answer to the question that you just asked is what you're about to say. Again, I think maybe this is one answer, right? One answer we can suggest is right. Again, it's not just, and that's what I want to emphasize to me. It's not just Midas Derech Eretz of like humility. It's like, no, it's Midas Emes. Like, this isn't the only answer. There definitely are other answers to this question, right? And Ad Kedei Kach is a Talmid Chacham careful that by a nega, he's not going to say it is a nega until the Kohen Paskin. And even more so, Kal v'chomer, right? Moshe Rabbeinu, who heard directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that this is going to happen, Bichatzos, wouldn't say Bichatzos. He would say Kichatzos. Because he was so careful that he himself couldn't prove that it was going to be Bechatzos, even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself told him it'll be Bechatzos, that he hesitated. And I think to me, every time I get to this week's Parshas Bo, it's a very strong muster about, the Midas HaEmes and how careful we have to be, right, with the truth. And that doesn't go back, just to go back to the halachic side of it, and that doesn't mean that there aren't halachic times when we're supposed to lie, right? That's the pshat, right? Mutter l'shanas upnei hashalom, the idea that you're allowed to lie for peace, which again is itself a great shiur and one that I'd be thrilled to give another time. But that doesn't mean there's never a time that you're allowed to lie. But the pshat is that you have to be so careful, right? You have to be so careful in the way that you speak to make sure that you're saying the exact truth. And when you say a pshat, to make sure that even if you think it's 100% the correct thing, or even if you're so strong in your opinion, to be careful and make sure that you really know that that's 100% MS. And even when you know it's 100% MS, even then there's a hesitation of Talmidei Chachamim to say things unless again unless without a shadow of a doubt it's going to be proven to be the MS. So again, a little bit of an exploration into the notion of truth, when you're allowed to lie, when you're not allowed to lie, and the like. Thank you so much, George, for inviting me.